Hi, welcome to Glossophilia's brand new podcast series. I'm Louise, and I've been writing the Glossophilia blog over at glossophilia.org for about 9 years now. The podcast is inspired by the blog and will follow its basic mission, which is to discuss, celebrate, observe, dissect, protect, laugh, rant and rave about the English language in all its usage and abusage. We'll discuss trends and mishaps, especially if they're doing the rounds or making headlines. We can get a bit word nerdy, but we try and avoid being prescriptive or preachy. Essentially, we're glossophiles and we love our mother tongue. And what better way to kick off the new series than to invite my good friend and fellow glossophile, Paul, to join me in this process.
Hey.
So welcome, Paul.
Why, thank you, Louise. Good to be here. I was thinking, and we had discussed about what the first episode should consist of, and I think we should go with the most obvious, which is the language elements related to life in the time of COVID-19.
Yeah, well, I think the first thing we should discuss is probably the two big words that we're all talking about. The first one is coronavirus, and then, of course, COVID-19. And I think some people are a little confused about why we have these two words and what they both mean. So basically, coronavirus it's been around a while. It describes a group of related viruses that cause diseases in mammals and birds. They were actually first discovered in the 1930s in domesticated chickens. And then a few decades later, they discovered that there were human coronaviruses. This was in the 1960s. Why corona, you might ask? not actually related to the Mexican beer, although some people did think that.
Although they must be suffering serious diminishment, I would imagine.
But it's actually named after the look of the virus itself, which has these sort of crown-like spikes on the edge of its surfaces, which gives the visual effect of something like a solar corona, you know, the crown around the sun.
Mm-hmm.
The name corona itself actually derived from the Latin word corona, meaning crown or wreath. The word coronavirus was actually first used in 1968, and it was used by a group of virologists who were writing about this new family of viruses that they had discovered and that they were writing about in the journal Nature. So that's the history of the word coronavirus. So it's a more generic term that's been around for a while. Mm-hmm. And Paul, why don't you talk about COVID-19?
Right, which is the distinction, right? I mean, so the virus is the coronavirus. The disease is COVID-19, as they've determined it. And that was determined by the World Health Organization in February of this year, that it was the WHO chief, Ghebreyesus, who explained that it's basically an acronym, and the CO stands for corona, VI is for virus, D is for disease, and the 19 obviously is for the year when the outbreak was first identified, which was at the end, in late December of 2019. Which does bring up a weird thing about the spelling, though.
I mean, yes.
Because you've seen this probably, depending on which publication you're reading it in, either all capped or initial capped. Some are hyphenating it. I think almost all do the hyphen. But yeah. The all cap, initial cap question is, yeah, one that I think we should look at.
Yes, because in fact, we were talking about this at work because we were wondering whether we should make it a proper name with a capital C or all caps. And my feeling was that this is an acronym. I mean, it's a slightly odd acronym because it's not every letter represents a new word, but it's essentially an acronym. And acronyms are capitalized, all the letters.
Right.
So the AP style book, in its wisdom, decided... Yes,
which is the Associated Press, by the way.
The Associated Press, yes, decided it should be all capitalized. And various publications, The Guardian, The LA Times, Chicago Tribune, New York Post, they all do it, I think, properly with all caps. But a couple of outlets haven't. The New York Times doesn't capitalize it, all caps. Neither does The Washington Post. Who knows why?
Right. But it seems odd to me that that would even be an editorial decision. I mean, Well, wow. It either is or it isn't. But perhaps. I mean, there are cases where I guess the Times has its own internal styles, right?
Yep.
They determine yes. those. So,
and they might be being very purist and saying it's not a real acronym.
Yeah.
They might think it's more of a proper name than an acronym. So who knows?
Okay. Well, we'll leave it to
and
them.
Actually, I've just read a piece in The Guardian where one of its editors is explaining that, like most British newspapers, apparently, The Guardian's style is to use uppercase for abbreviations that are written and spoken as a collection of letters, such as BBC, IMF, NHS, whereas acronyms that are pronounced as words go upper and lower, e.g. NASA, UNICEF, and now COVID. So that's their explanation.
Mm-hmm.
So then let's talk about some of the words and phrases and things that we're all using now that we weren't necessarily using back in January or last year. I think one thing that's very interesting is this idea of social distancing, which is a thing now. We all know it, we use it, we talk about it.
Right.
I think what's interesting is that the phrase social distancing is a bit of a misnomer.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the World Health Organization came to that same conclusion about a month ago. And they said, actually, it really shouldn't be social distancing. It should be physical distancing, because what mm-hmm. everyone's trying to achieve is a physical distance, but not a social distancing. We're really trying to keep socially connected, but physically
right.
distanced. The fact that they haven't really managed to reverse it the way they had hoped to.
And by the way, Louise, did they make a specific point of that? Like,
yes,
correcting
they did.
It, or is that just the language they choose in their publications and so on?
No, they originally started using the phrase social distancing, and then in their press briefing, actually on March the 20th, their epidemiologist called Maria van Kerkhoff, she said, "We're changing to say physical distance, and that's on purpose because we want people to remain connected." They actually said that in their press briefing.
Okay, so they've addressed it directly.
They have, but it doesn't seem to have worked because we're still talking about social distancing.
Right.
So I think that's a sign of something. It was already well in the lingo when they decided perhaps it wasn't quite right, but I think it's too late.
But we can't go back.
No.
But there are other terms like that too, like Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
That is, I mean, should we all have invested in that stock? I mean, but the fact that it's worked its way into the language, like, I'll Zoom you.
Right.
I find kind of funny.
Or we're going to Zoom, or we were Zooming.
Right.
I think that the funny question will be, will it be like the other verbs that started off as brand names, like Hoover, you know, to Hoover or to Xerox, which are now verbs, generic verbs with small letters nowadays, even though they started as brands.
Oh, that's a good
point.
So
I wonder if Zoom will go the same way.
Huh.
It'll be interesting.
Well, that's true. We do still use Xerox, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even though there are 8,000 companies that make Xerox machines or copy machines.
Right. Huh. So, and another thing that's interesting about the Zoom verb is I've noticed people saying things like, I went to a Zoom party, or I'm attending a Zoom mm-hmm. party, which is interesting because you're not really going anywhere or attending anything. But it's interesting how your language reflects, something.
Yeah, no, I see. No, but you're right. The proper term would probably be, I took part in a Zoom meeting.
Right, or I clicked.
But what you're feeling like is that you'd want to go to a party, right?
Yeah. So it's almost
good
as
point.
If our desires or our, you know, it's wishful.
Are leaking out
into
our language.
Into our language.
And the others that are now current parlance, like isolation or self-isolation or mm-hmm. quarantine. I personally find self-isolating one of the more curious terms because it seems redundant to me. I mean, if you're isolated, I mean, okay, you could isolate within a family. Your family could be isolated. But self-isolating, doesn't that strike your ear oddly?
A little bit, yes. Yes.
How do you pull it apart?
It sounds a little bit tautologous. Mm-hmm. Although I guess you can isolate something else. You can, I mean, it can be used as a transitive verb, can't it? You can isolate.
Well, that's true. Yeah, something. You can isolate a germ. You could. Yeah.
So I guess technically, I guess self-isolation is a thing, but it does sound a bit odd to me too, I have to say. I also think that nowadays isolation and quarantine are a little bit synonymous. I'm never quite sure whether you're supposed to say you're isolating or quarantining yourself.
Is there an actual difference? I mean, I personally would have always thought they were synonyms. But
I guess isolation just refers to the fact that you are isolating yourself from others, whereas quarantining suggests...
Well, it implies something medical, obviously.
Exactly. Yeah. That you suspect or think that you might be harboring some virus or disease that somebody else might catch. But I think it's interesting that now people seem to be using both words quite
interchangeably. Almost. Yeah.
Another word I think is interesting is, well, virus. I mean, the fact that until a few months ago, something going viral was a good thing. Mm-hmm. For a lot of people.
Depending on what was going viral,
And I think when people talked about viruses, we thought about computer viruses or things going viral. So it'll be interesting to see how much we use that word in future as a bad medical thing rather than a good digital thing.
Well, that's a good point. It has all sorts of new implications now, new associations, at least.
The question is, what will be our word of the year in 2020 when all the dictionaries start nominating their words?
My guess would be Zoom.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. Just because it has taken on an entirely new meaning.
Yes.
Unlike the quibbling we've been doing about other elements here. Zoom is really, I mean, I'd never heard of it 2.5 months ago. And now, you know, I'm using that word 10 times a day.
As
well as the program.
I think that could be a top one.
And you've been listening more than I have, I think, to Governor Cuomo. Yeah, I just read about him because I'm not having a television. I don't get to watch him.
I listen to him every day, and I am so struck by his eloquence and his. There's something very literate about him. I love the fact that he knows the difference between and among. he does that all the time, and that just thrills me. He uses words that I've never heard of, like de minimis. Do you know what de minimis means?
To minimize?
Well, I looked it up, and it means too trivial or minor to merit consideration, especially in law.
And the context in which he was using it was, what was
being minimized? I think he was talking about statistics and facts being de minimis, i.e. not being very important. He was a lawyer, wasn't he? So
I
think it is a legal term, but that was sort of interesting. Another thing that I've noticed, he often, in the middle of one of his talks, he'll pick out words and describe them and note. For example, he was talking about the power dynamic between state governments and the federal governments. And he talked about, in fact, he said, state governments possess inherent advantages which will ever give them an influence in ascendancy. And then he stopped and said, ascendancy, a beautiful word.
Really?
I love that about him. Yes, he's a language man, it seems.
Yeah,
I think that's being quite
And it's curious, if you read about him, like I do in the papers, that never gets mentioned. I mean, I guess there's only so much they can put in the paper. But,
yeah.
I mean, they quote him. But... yeah, the eloquence doesn't come across in the printed page. I really should watch him.
You should start listening to him. Very eloquent man.
We're lucky to have him.
We are.
On a lighter note, please. What is it you said that you saw some rewrites of famous books?
Yes,
I missed that one.
Basically, it was somebody on LitHub called Jesse Gaynor. she had written the, it was rather fun. She'd taken first lines of classic novels and rewritten them for social distancing. One of them, the first one that I loved actually, it was, "It is a truth universally acknowledged that a single man in possession of a good fortune must be hoarding toilet paper." That's, of course, a take on Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen.
Yeah. Well, and thank you for sharing them with me, because there were a couple that you shared that I really liked. Like, you'll know it immediately.
Lolita. Actually, this was one that I thought up.
Oh, they were your inventions. Okay. Well, I thought they were all coming from the Lit Hub thing.
Yeah,
no, that makes it even better. Well, nice job, because your Lolita one I really enjoyed. Lolita, light of my LinkedIn, fire of my Facebook. Nabokov, I think, would find that funny. And your Anna Karenina, your Tolstoy one, was also very good. "Happy families are all alike. Every unhappy family is unhappy in its own self-isolation." Good one.
And then I did one final one, based on Charles Dickens's A Tale of Two Cities.
Mm-hmm.
"It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of quarantinis. It was the age of no yeast. It was the epoch of Zoom parties. It was the epoch of Zoom meetings. It was the season of free streams of everything. It was the season of endless at-home concerts. It was the spring of Cuomo, and it was the winter of Trump."
Oh, we can only hope.
Yeah.
Nicely done. Very nicely done. I think Mr. Dickens would be tickled. But I liked your idea, too, about paying attention to the fact that it's the official poetry month.
Yes.
And that poetry should be included in not only this episode, but maybe future episodes as well.
I think that's a good idea. I think that's a very good idea. So should we each read a poem?
Good idea. Yeah. Why don't you begin?
Okay, well, I'm going to read a poem or an excerpt from a poem that was written in 1890. It was actually written by a young man, a 15-year-old, who grew up to become a world leader. So this poem is called The Influenza, and I'm going to read a short excerpt from it. And it was written by Winston Churchill in 1890, who was very affected by the pandemic known as the Russian flu. So this is the excerpt. "Yet Father Neptune strove right well to moderate this plague of hell and thwart it in its course. And though it passed the streak of brine, the English Channel, and penetrated this thin line, it came with broken force. For though it ravaged far and wide, both village, town, and countryside, its power to kill was o'er. And with the favouring winds of spring, blessed is the time of which I sing, it left our native shore."
Wow. Churchill was how old when he wrote that?
He was 15 years old when he wrote that.
That's impressive. And powerful. And applicable, actually. Yeah.
And you're going to read...
The one that I was thinking of last week, I don't know if you knew or anybody cared, but it was would have been Wordsworth's 250th birthday last Tuesday. So I just happened to be reading some Wordsworth in honor of his birthday. And this one seemed really appropriate. It's a very well-known one. I mean, I think, "I wandered lonely as a cloud. I wandered lonely as a cloud that floats on high o'er airs, vales and hills, when all at once I saw a crowd, a host of golden daffodils, beside the lake, beneath the trees, fluttering and dancing in the breeze. Continuous as the stars that shine and twinkle on the Milky Way, they stretched in never-ending line along the margin of a bay. 10,000 saw I at a glance, tossing their heads in a sprightly dance. The waves beside them danced, but they outdid the sparkling waves in glee. A poet could be not but gay in such a jocund company. I gazed and gazed, but little thought what wealth the show to me had brought. For oft when on my couch I lie, in vacant or in pensive mood, they flash upon that inward eye which is the bliss of solitude. And then my heart with pleasure fills and dances with the daffodils. That last stanza in particular, I thought was...
It's very, very fitting. Appropriate. Yeah.
Too many people on their couches. And what I, you know, only some of us refer to as the bliss of solitude.
Right. That's good.
I don't know if you've noticed, but daffodils are everywhere these days.
Yes.
Absolutely the season. So,
Nice way to end. Let's raise our quarantinis to our health.
Chin.
And also
Sante,
thanks.
I think we should say to everybody.
Sante. And thank you to our producer, Lily Wen, for all her expert remote help.
Yes.
And here's to next time.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Lily. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Develop a bit.